Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Rachel Spears, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, a Northwestern food workers picket, Latin American dance, and LinkedIn. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. Last week, Northwestern and food hospitality workers held their first picket in 3 years amid negotiations with the campus dining provider. Sophia Quesa has the story.
All right, how's everybody feeling this morning?
Good, good.
I can't hear you. I said, how you feeling this morning?
Good.
Fantastic. Did everybody sign in?
On November 1st, surrounded by signs, honking horns, and an inflatable union scabby rat, over 200 food and hospitality workers at Northwestern took to Sheridan Road in their first informal picket in 3 years.
Let's make a single file line this way. Who are we?
Local one.
After the workers' contract with Compass Group expired on August 31st, workers refrained from picketing for 2 months, while their union, Local One, tried to work on a new contract with the food service company. However, as that time ran out, no deal was reached. Among the workers' chief demands, a better pension plan, better health care, job security, and higher wages. Hugo LaMousse has been working at Northwestern for 20 years. He is currently a lead cook and at the kosher station in Allison Dining Hall.
We feel like everything went up, and the rent, the food, everything went up, so I think we deserve more while we get paid.
The need for better treatment became even more important after October, when the university announced the closure of the Kellogg School of Management's James Allen Center. For years, there were internal rumors that the center would close, but workers said that once the closure was announced, more than 80 employees were left without a reassignment, placing them in limbo for months. Eric Brown worked at the Allen Center for 11 years. Eventually, he was told he'd be starting at a new job at the Kellogg Global Hub on December 2nd, but Brown says that that wasn't necessarily the case for everyone there.
There is definitely a handful or a couple handfuls of people who haven't been offered a job, especially people with less seniority.
Therefore, advocating for job security in their new contract has become even more vital than ever.
Job security hits us really hard, being that we just are currently going through the closing of a building where some of us have worked. I've been there 11 years. Some people have been there 30 plus years. And it's a feeling that hits, it's a feeling that feels too familiar.
It feels all too familiar since workers found themselves in a similar situation in 2021 when they had a contract dispute with Compass Group over low wages. And while the workers did succeed in getting higher wages and averting a strike, the win was only temporary. For example, LaMousse finds himself in the same position he was in years ago.
Getting paid like $16 an hour, and then we got a raise. I'm in $24.68 right now, and I used to do 2 jobs, and I didn't do 2 jobs for 2 years, and now the way everything went up, I'm back doing 2 jobs, so.
But these issues aren't unique to just Compass Group. Despite changing food providers in 2018, resulting in the current partnership with Compass, Brown says things haven't really changed.
It's very similar, you know. I worked with Aramark from 2013 through 2018, and now with Compass 2018 through 2024. It's just the same greedy corporate greed.
Say, what do we want? When do we want it?
The workers aren't alone in their fight, though, as they were joined last Friday by dozens of student demonstrators, including members of Students Organizing for Labor Rights, aka SOLAR. Weinberg senior Julian Pfeffer was one of the members present and says students can play a vital role in supporting workers during the negotiation process.
We have the positionality and the privilege as students to take actions that can put pressure on different aspects of the university than the workers themselves are positioned to.
SOLAR collaborates directly with the workers and helps on outreach to make students aware of events like November 1st picket and with opportunities for mutual aid events such as quarterly packages for workers containing requested supplies and cash contributions. Pfeffer and the other students on campus aren't going anywhere.
We're not going to stop organizing until the workers' demands for fair wages and just working conditions are met. Regardless of what narrative Compass tries to spin, talk to your campus workers and they'll tell you that they need student support more than ever.
Because, as Pfeffer argues, workers are and should be included in the care and good treatment that is expected for the rest of the campus community.
Our entire college experience would be impossible without the work of campus workers. They make our meals, they clean dining halls, they take meticulous care of academic buildings and our dorms.
As contract negotiations continues on between Local One and Compass Group, the workers are hopeful for the bright future they deserve. It's a rough road to a fair contract, but it's a familiar one they're willing to tread again. Here's Brown.
You know, going through this before, it's like when we stand together, fight together, we organize and mobilize, we win.
Compass Group responded to WNUR News' request for comment on Friday, November 8th, and wrote the following. Compass Group has been actively negotiating in good faith with Unite Here Local 1 since May 28, 2024, in an attempt to reach an agreement prior to the existing agreement's expiration of August 31, 2024. While we have made meaningful progress during our 9 negotiation sessions, we have yet to finalize an agreement. Compass Group has requested dates to negotiate with Unite Here Local 1 for the entire months of November and December. However, Unite Here Local 1 has only agreed to meet on 2 dates. In addition, Compass Group approached Unite Here Local 1 with a contract extension agreement, and the extension was declined by Unite Here Local 1. We remain dedicated to reaching a fair and mutually beneficial collective bargaining agreement that provides meaningful increased wages and benefits to our associates. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Quesa.
The Northwestern Spanish Club put on a Latin American dance event last Wednesday, featuring the Latin American Music Ensemble. Turn up your volume because Mariah Petway has the story.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Around 40 students filled Harris Hall last week Wednesday to dance to the sounds of live Latin music by the Northwestern Latin American Music Ensemble. Students were dancing bachata, salsa, merengue, and cumbia as Michel Juarez, student and member of the Latin American Music Ensemble, taught the steps.
Right foot back, 1, 2, 3, back to the beginning. Now do our left foot and hit your heel on the floor.
Attendee Jackie Maya, a radio, television, and film freshman, appreciated not just participating, but being taught the steps to each dance.
I appreciate a lot of the music, and like they also taught people how to dance, especially since like there are some people that probably don't know or didn't grow up with it. I used to go to parties, but I used to be like really hesitant to dance even though they already taught me. It was only until like this past year where like my friends taught me, but again, like I haven't practiced that much, so it was really nice. They taught people how to do the basic steps, and I was like, oh, remember this, like I got this.
The event was hosted by the Northwestern Spanish Club, but fellow event organizer and assistant professor Estilita Cassiani wanted it to be open to all Northwestern students to showcase Northwestern's Latin music ensemble and to allow students to explore different styles of Latin music.
So basically for tonight, we want the students to have an amazing time, but also to dance Latin music. And we also wanted to showcase the band because they are a group of students that are here at Northwestern who are Latinx. So what we wanted was that all Northwestern students, you know, come together today, dance, connect with others, but also listen and dance Latin music.
Weinberg freshman and pianist in the Latin American Music Ensemble, Adrian Negri, says that as a musician, he appreciated that people were dancing.
Definitely love seeing everyone move. We're a music band, right? But we're not dancing, we're just playing. But because we have so many people right now, we keep switching in between like instrumentalists. And so it was fun seeing everyone, you know, move around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Students not only got to learn the steps to various dances, but they learned brief histories of some of them.
But cha-cha comes from the Dominican Republic. I don't know as much history about it, but it's been from the 1950s. It started on the countryside of the Dominican Republic. Usually was first outcast, but you know, as things are, they're outcast, especially lower class, and then eventually the upper class takes it, and then it becomes a national genre. So it's kind of like the little tragic history about cha-cha.
Maya said that she felt seen by the event, as her Hispanic culture is underrepresented in her radio, television, and film courses.
Being in my major, there really isn't that many Hispanics. I think I might be the only Hispanic in my year. So it's very like, there's a lot of lack of my own culture, which I was like, is very different where I came from. Yeah, I'm from like, I was born in the US, but where I like, where I live is very Hispanic heavy, so even though I am still in the US, it's still a lot of the Mexican culture, the Hispanic culture, wherever I go, and not having it here feels very kind of barren without it in a way. So I just felt like coming here is very, you know, it's got to bring up a little bit more joy from where I came from.
Negri said events like these are important to him because they allow him to connect with his culture.
I think they're important because it helps us, at least me personally, it helps me reminisce of my country and my traditions and how I used to be like, you know, I used to be a kid at family parties or like any party really, and this would be what it would be like. And I've been here for 8 years in the U.S. and it's hard to find that, you know, there's not that many Hispanic people here, obviously, and it's not the tradition. And so having this, kind of remembering back where you're coming from, it's just amazing for me.
The ensemble is just over a year old, but has gained about 10 to 15 new members since it began. Negri says they are looking to raise money for instruments.
We're growing. I think last year they had less than 20 members. Now we have like 30, 35 members. And then we're also trying to raise money to buy instruments, and it's been going well. We've played like 4 times already, or like 4 to 5 times already this quarter, and I think that's a good number.
Cassiani says that more students showed up than she anticipated, and they would like to attend more campus Latin American music events like this one, so she's hoping for a bigger space next time.
Please. And many of the students were like, can we please do it again, not just this quarter, but also spring quarter, for example. And I think in the future, we will have to have like a big classroom or a big room.
To stay up to date on future events like this, you can follow NU Spanish Club and NU.LME on Instagram for more live Latin American music performances. For WNUR News, I'm Mariah Petway.
In the age of social media, you might have heard the complaint that we are overconnected. If you've ever tried to network, you know the platform where you can never be connected enough. Reporters Georgia Kerrigan and Melody Zhu have the story on LinkedIn.
Recognize that sound?
You have 2 new invitations. You appeared in 9 searches. Add Maria, Northwestern posted. 7 people noticed you since you set a journalism alert.
What about those notifications? Chances are, whether you're a networking enthusiast or even just relatively invested in social media, you do.
Founded in 2002, LinkedIn was created to, quote, connect professionals around the world to make them more productive and successful, unquote.
But is that actually how it's understood by users? To find out, we asked some Northwestern students and staff their opinions.
Middle sophomore Sylvie Slotkin is a self-proclaimed LinkedIn enthusiast.
I really love LinkedIn. I got LinkedIn literally the day I turned 16. I have 500 plus connections, and it is one of my favorite things to flex. I think it's so fun. I love seeing like what everyone's doing and posting about what I'm doing. I definitely like use it kind of as a social media. Like I doom scroll on LinkedIn for sure.
But as for whether LinkedIn has helped her professional connections, Slotkin wasn't so sure.
I don't think I've actually ever used it to like find a job. I'm trying to think if like I've made any like actual real life connections.
Weinberg sophomore Maddie Huang said the same thing, that LinkedIn is more of a social media platform for her.
I personally don't use LinkedIn as like a way to make connections. I kind of use it as a way to just see classmates, see what everyone's doing.
Considering that, Huang said there are clear downsides to the platform.
Overall, it is pretty toxic, especially because people are always trying to like use it more as like a social media instead of a business kind of academic thing that LinkedIn's like meant for. It definitely makes you feel and have a little bit of imposter syndrome if everyone that's like on LinkedIn is doing all these amazing things and you kind of just aren't.
Joshua Sukoff, a junior studying journalism, had yet another unique perspective about what LinkedIn is and what its benefits are.
I don't view it as social media. I just kind of view it as an interactive resume where people can kind of connect with people, and it's just kind of a networking tool.
As a photographer, Sukoff uploads photos to his website that fit the LinkedIn banner dimensions to help students enhance the optics of their profiles.
I noticed everyone uses the same photo from Google. And so I'm like, oh, I have some great photos too. Why not just make some little banners and just kind of put them on my website? And then if people find them, they find them. I find that it's valuable for people who are trying to make a great impression.
While acknowledging the platform is a useful tool to make a good impression on potential employers, Northwestern Career Advancement Director Tracy Thomas warned about using LinkedIn as a social media.
Just like social media, I think you have to put it into context that you're looking at some person in this very specific period of time.
Northwestern Library's web and social media coordinator, Corey Slowick, theorized about why the platform has started to feel more like social media and less like a career tool.
LinkedIn has become the like de facto text-based social media for a lot of people who've kind of migrated from Twitter, which means that there's now like your professional and your personal life are even more intertwined, which I guess is a trend across all social media, and there's not really a break between professional and personal anymore.
However, Slowick acknowledged that the platform's joint social and professional nature has a purpose.
I guess it's useful for maintaining networks. People that I wouldn't necessarily be in really direct contact with, people I went to college with. It's good to keep those connections alive.
Moreover, she had an idea of how LinkedIn is helpful to college students specifically.
It seems like you're almost like practicing for when you'll need it later to maintain those networks, especially as they grow.
In her role at NCA, Thomas regularly encounters students concerned about establishing themselves in the professional world. When it comes to using LinkedIn to accomplish this, Thomas considers the platform to be
a double-edged sword. A lot of students will come in feeling anxious about the internship search because they saw someone on LinkedIn who got an internship or they got a job.
But it's still important, right? Because isn't LinkedIn an industry standard?
Yes, but for some industries, not so much. It really depends on the industry that you're interested in.
So what is the consensus?
I think it's important for students to continue to enhance their network, particularly their professional network. I think LinkedIn is one way to do that. The really key piece here is to connect with professionals. There are many, many different ways to connect with professionals. So if it's not through LinkedIn, it can be through attending employer events. It can be through Our Northwestern. It can be through Ask a Wildcat, through the Waldron program. It could be through the Northwestern Mentorship Program. There are so many ways to connect, and I think students have to do what feels most comfortable for them.
For WNUR News, I'm Melody Hsu.
And I'm Georgia Kerrigan.
The clocks turned back last Sunday, and 5 p.m. now feels like midnight. Why, you may ask?
Here's Ilse von Heimberg with the answer and more for Fairweather Friends.
Hi, I'm Ilse von Heimberg. Welcome back to Fairweather Friends. Each week, we give you a peek into the local and national weather. What a week of weather it's been, from clouds, clouds, to more clouds. I wonder what the weekend has in store. I'll give you a hint. It starts with the C. From Evanston, Illinois, this is Fairweather Friends.
Here's the weather.
Today, we have a high of 58 degrees and a low of 46 degrees, with mostly sunny conditions. Although, that sun sure doesn't stick around for long anymore. Daylight saving time has me thinking it's time for bed when it's really only 5 p.m. This weekend, you can expect a high of 56 degrees on Saturday and a low of 53 degrees, with more clouds. The winds will also pick up, and look out for a shower or two. Don't be caught without your raincoat or umbrella, just in case. I find it always rains when I'm least prepared. For Sunday, there's a forecast of mostly cloudy conditions with even more wind. Shocker. We're looking at a high of 59 and a low of 47 and a chance of showers in the morning. So, in summary, Evanston has clouds, winds, and showers to look forward to this weekend. Not exactly the most ideal for Northwestern's parents' weekend, but I guess there has to be cloudy days to appreciate the sunny ones. And speaking of sun, or lack thereof, what's with daylight saving time anyways? What does that even mean? Why does it exist other than to fuel my seasonal depression? The practice was introduced to set the clocks forward an hour in the summertime to make more use of the daylight hours, hence spring forward and fall back. In the wintertime, setting the clocks back allows people to start their workdays when the sun has already risen. It was first implemented in the U.S. in 1918 during World War I for 7 months to conserve energy, as more time with the sun meant less energy used. It was implemented again in World War II and made standard in 1966. Now, there have been calls to take away daylight saving time as changes in the clocks upset our natural circadian rhythms and produce car accidents and mood disturbances. However, as for now, it's not going anywhere. That's all for this week's edition of Fairweather Friends. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay warm and dry and try not to get too bogged down by the darkness. Just take it as a sign that the holidays are coming. In Evanston, Illinois, Ilse von Heimberg, WNUR News.
This week is another busy one on the Evanston and Chicago music scenes. Krishna Kumar has the scoop on what events to look out for.
Welcome to Concert Countdown, WNR News' comprehensive guide to upcoming shows in the Evanston and Chicago area. From Evanston Space to the Salt Shed and more, if you're looking to see some live music this weekend, you've come to the right place. Starting off local, Jake Rosenkod Quartet is performing in Evanston. This Wednesday, at Evanston Space, come be serenaded by some of Chicago's foremost jazz musicians. Drummer Jake Rosenkod joins forces with Joff Bradfield on saxophone, Scott Hess on guitar, and Clark Summers on bass. Doors open at 6:30, and tickets range from $15 for standing room to $25 for a table seat. Coming up in Chicago, we've narrowed our selection down to performances from Lupe Fiasco and Modest Mouse. Hometown legend Lupe Fiasco is back in Chicago this Sunday, performing at the Salt Shed indoors in River North. The Grammy-winning rapper and producer, known for his signature vocal delivery and masterful production work, is touring his 9th studio album, Samurai. General admissions tickets start at $61, and doors open at 8. Also at Salt Shed, critically acclaimed indie rock band Modest Mouse performs this upcoming Thursday with doors at 7:30. The connections between the shows don't end there. Fiasco's largest hit, The Show Goes On, includes an interpolation of Modest Mouse's Float On. The Black Harper Session opens for this 20th anniversary tour, and general admission tickets start at $61. Next, looking all the way ahead to 2025, Ash just announced her trilogy tour. Ash, the Juno-nominated singer-songwriter, is touring her titular trilogy of albums, including new release Wilson, in the spring of next year. She will be in Chicago on June 8th. That's all we've got for you this week. Tune in next Friday to find out about more concerts happening near you. For WNUR News, I'm Krishna Kumar.
Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. Yesterday, a new exhibit opened in the Dittmar Memorial Gallery in Northwestern's Norris University Center. It is called Fabric of the Earth and features fiber-based works that invite viewers to think more about climate change. In Evanston, the Purple and Yellow Lines will be closed this weekend for track work and maintenance. Trains will not be running between the Linden and Howard stations, but shuttle services will be available for travelers. A judge has granted special counsel Jack Smith's request to pause the January 6th case after Trump's re-election. This would give more time to determine how to proceed, as the case would now be against a sitting president. That's all for WNUR News at 6. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Georgia Kerrigan, and our reporters are Sophia Kesa, Mariah Petway, Georgia Kerrigan, Melody Zhu, Ilse von Heimberg, and Krishna Kumar. I'm Rachel Spears. Catch our next newscast Monday, November 11th, 2024. Now back to scheduled programming.